6. May Day. I watched the hair of the grizzly flatten out like wheat bent under a strong wind. As the prop from our small plane passed 30 feet above the 1,000-pound Bruin, I always thought bears would be fluffy, playful, and well-kept, you know, like the ones at the zoo. But this bear was wet, muddy, mean, and hungry. He was about a quarter of a mile behind a huge double-shovel caribou that was struggling to keep ahead of the bear. Somehow, the large caribou's hindquarters had been wounded, and it was limping badly, possibly injured by the ravenous bear. We were on a caribou hunt in the Iliamna mountain range of Alaska. The weather was perfect as we flew, about 60 degrees and sunny, which is unusual for this area of the country. Most days, the fog and clouds are thick as a white woolen blanket draped over the windshield. Without flight instrumentation, a plane can easily lose its ability to navigate the dangerous mountain passes. Our pilot was an experienced bush pilot with many years of navigating through these rugged, steep mountains and over the area's massive glaciers and lakes. The landscape was ruggedly breathtaking, but the weather can suddenly change and swallow up anyone who dares venture into her cold, silent grasp. When we reached our destination, the pilot circled the spongy tundra several times just to make sure there was enough space to set down the small bush plane. There were no runways, only the keen sense of the pilot to judge wind direction and a sharp eye to keep a lookout for large rocks or small ravines that could puncture a tire or damage the landing gear. As the pilot decreased power and touched down, the plane bounced side to side on the huge bush tires. As he shut down the engine, the prop came to a standstill, and I opened the side door, placed my feet on the lip of the door frame, and jumped to the spongy Alaskan floor. I figured this was probably the closest I'd ever come to experiencing what it was like for the Apollo astronauts to step foot on the moon. Although my ears were still adjusting from being in a bush plane with a prop roaring for the past couple of hours, the absence of sound was deafening. The pilot began to toss our gear onto the tundra. He was leaving the two of us for a three-day hunt, but he needed to go immediately to guide a sheep hunt a couple hundred miles away. Once our gear was on the ground, the pilot fired up the engine, gave us a thumbs up, and with his eyes wide open and a crazed smile on his face, disappeared into the frozen wilderness. Time as I knew it had suddenly stopped. My friend Ralph and I unpacked our gear, set up our two-man extreme weather tent, and quickly inspected the area to get a feel for our new temporary home. We were on top of a grassy knob about a mile and a half long and about three-quarters of a mile wide. Three rolling hills formed a row approximately 5 miles long. Each knob gradually fell off to the valley floor and was surrounded by millions of acres of alder bushes and thick swampy vegetation. The perfect place for grizzly bears to lie in waiting. And I really didn't want to see one of these beasts up close. The caribou herds were beginning to pass through on their annual migration, and the distant mountain peaks, usually masked by fog and snow, were now proudly proclaiming the glory of God. Day 3. On the morning of the third day, we spotted a large group of caribou about 3 miles away on the adjoining grassy hillside. We decided that Ralph should circle to the back of the herd to locate any shooter bulls, and I would do a frontal assault, belly crawling up on the herd using a dry creek bed as cover. Like his bush pilot father, Ralph has got a crazy side that can unnerve a lot of people and bring out the best in others. He loves to take semi-calculated risks for the sake of upping the ante. What Ralph was about to do split the hairs between raw courage and outright insanity. As I crawled within 50 yards of the herd, I noticed the strangest thing I think I've ever seen in my entire life. There at the rear of the herd was Ralph, bow held against his head like a set of antlers, walking up on these massive animals. He'd already scanned the herd and found no shooter bulls in the group, so he decided to have a little fun and just see how close he could get before they figured out he wasn't one of them. I'm sure my jaw was on the creek bed floor as he came prancing through the herd. As Ralph disappeared behind the caribou, I crawled a little closer to the top edge of the creek bed for a better look. It hadn't taken long for the caribou to realize that he wasn't their next of kin, and they were now all on their feet running away from Ralph, which meant they were headed straight for me, and they were coming fast. At first, I was struck dumb by the sheer size and speed of these animals. Then I realized I'd better hit the dirt, or I was going to be crushed under the 600-pound caribou coming straight at me like a freight train. As I dropped to the ground and tucked up against the forward edge of the creek bed, the caribou began passing all around me. Their hooves left craters the size of softballs in their wake. But in that moment, I knew I was alive. As we headed back to camp, we noticed there was a definite change in the weather. The wind had picked up, and the temperatures were dropping quickly. The blue skies we'd enjoyed earlier were eroding into a dark storm front. By the time we arrived at camp, we knew things were about to change for the worse. We just didn't know how much worse our conditions could get.